Let's do it today on RBKD. The Astros, they were left for dead. Now they're in the driver's seat as they head back to H-Town. Texas with a bye week. We'll get into the horns, some nuggets there as they get ready for Baylor next Saturday. We talk some college football. We talk some pro football, including is Deshaun leaving. Is this going to be happening rather soon? He went from DB High to DBU, ended up in Detroit. He is in more private clubs than a swinger. He's as open-minded as anyone, yet does discriminate against white condiments. He's a football theorist. He's an All-American. He is our one and only Rod Babers.
And my co-host, he's back, a lifetime Longhorn, but first, a lifetime Austinite, a conservative liberal who doesn't discriminate, which is why his dating history looks a lot like a commercial for the Rainbow Coalition. My man was a reality TV star before it even was a thing, and yes, he's only got one ball, but more testicular fortitude than you or your whole team. He's my co-host, the estimable Kevin Dunn. How you doing, brother?
Doing great.
Good to have you back.
Good to be back. Good to be back. Had to take care of some stuff, but always good to be back doing a sports show with you and just talking it up and talking to the great people of Austin, Texas.
They missed you, too.
I appreciate it.
On their behalf, I'll tell you. They missed you, too.
I appreciate it. We got a good little team here, man. It's fun. So anytime we lose someone, you feel a little bit. But you also trust your team. You can have a Max Muncy and a Justin Turner go out. And you can still not get blown out by the Braves.
Damn right. I like how you bring it all back home.
Bring it all back home.
Stepping up in the clutch.
Yes,
sir. That's what
it's
about. The Longhorns haven't been able to do it. The Astros, go Astros! They've been all about it.
We're a fourth quarter team.
Stepping up in the clutch. We are a fourth quarter team. That's what you want to be. I mean, you don't want to be the team that people are like, oh, they don't show up in the fourth quarter. They don't show up in the clutch. You don't want that reputation. In any business,
anything in life.
Relationship, you don't want them to be like, oh, when it's
sex,
when the fit hits the sand, you don't show up. You don't want that reputation. No,
although
sex especially.
If you're a second half team in sex, I don't know what's going on in the first half. But
you want to be a second half team. You definitely don't want.
You don't want to be Texas.
You don't want to be Texas when it comes to sex. I mean, that means basically everything you had, you gave it all in the first couple of minutes, and then you got nothing left.
Now, Texas has that 15-year-old in them.
You got to finish strong.
Finish strong.
A little premature celebration.
Have some moves set up. Although I will say at times, maybe we're not a fourth quarter team. We have fun in the 4 o'clock hour or the 6 o'clock hour, which is our fourth hour.
It's four quarters, baby.
It's four quarters, right? We're going to do that today
at some point.
We're going to actually talk some Dak MVP race and stuff like that in the 6 o'clock hour. But kind of a weird week for Texas because they're 4-3. They have the off week. And I would think right now, I would hope, Rod, this is really about self-evaluation, re-evaluation, right? Kind of figuring out who you are. Mm-hmm. I've said Monday that I would hope that we kind of get to a point where maybe this week it's like, hey, we're going to open up jobs. And not that we're going to change jobs, but our play has not been great.
Yeah.
You can get on the coaching a little bit, but we're going to open it up outside of number five. Number 8 and 95 are probably okay, too.
Yeah, 8 and 95 are probably okay. Just because those guys, the ceiling for them seems really high. Right now, X-Man, he's leading the Big 12. He's leading the Big 12 or at least among the top two or three in all of the major statistical categories in receiving in the Big 12, and he's just a freshman.
Just a freshman.
And
old freshman at 160.
And Alfred Collins is, I'm only leading the team in pressures right now.
He is.
But I believe my man C.J. Vogel pointed that out, a football brainiac, that he only plays. He's like sixth. You look at snaps played. You know, not fixes, but ways to at least make progress toward improvement, right? Because I don't know if you're going to fix it, right? You're averaging giving up over 200 yards rushing a game, over 5 yards per rush. I don't know if you're going to fix it, but you can at least improve. That's what we want to do. So more snaps for 95. Improve. There are reports now. Give my man Chip Brown some credit over at Horns 24/7. He's doing a good job. He's got an insider piece. We won't give you everything. And it's pretty extensive, too. It's pretty expansive. So I'd encourage everybody to go check it out. We did a good job this morning, but he threw out the little nugget and he was on with B&E. Man, Chip Brown was on with B&E. So if you want to hear some nuggets straight from the horse's mouth, straight from Chip's mouth, you can go back on the podcast page and go listen to B&E this morning. And he was on there and he dropped some of these nuggets, but one of them was that. The Josh Thompson getting reps at safety to try to, once again, just improve the safety play, which is something they need drastically too, because, you know, the safeties being that extra defender in the box, adding that guy to the, you know, running the alley, trying to fill the run gaps, that's crucial. And maybe they believe Josh Thompson will do a better job than the guys they have there now. We know Chris Adamora got more playing time in the Oklahoma State game, so they're trying to throw in some other personnel, or at least give more personnel opportunities to help them improve. The linebacker Jalen Ford showed out in that game, so you might have some new faces on this defense once that when they come out versus Baylor.
Jalen Ford had the highest grade, and it's for a position unit that has not had high grades. So,
yeah, the linebacker unit, which. Yeah, I mean,
they sit in Georgia with N'Kobe Dean ahead of them.
I mean, Demo, and remember, Demo left the game. DeMarvion Overshown ended up leaving that Oklahoma State game. So they played more base personnel, 3-4, three down linemen, four linebackers, than, I mean, they probably played that 65 to 70% of the time.
Easily the majority. Yeah. Went back and rewatched last night. It was easily the majority.
It's more when you go back and rewatch it.
It really
than
is.
Initially you thought. Yeah, I totally agree with you. So that was one of his adjustments. He was like, "Hey, my rush defense is a sieve. It's terrible. What can I do? Well, put more skilled rush defenders on the field." That's what he decided to do. That is a very obtuse philosophy in the Big 12, but I applaud him at least seeking out ways to improve, right? You got to come up with solutions to complex problems. And hey, that was I don't know if it was a solution, but
he's trying
to make some adjustments. He's not just sitting back in a too high show looking going, "Well, hope my guys win." No, you need to help them win. Schematically, help them win. That's your job as a coach. And I'm seeing that from PK.
And understand he should have in Fayetteville at some point, but understand that your preseason conception of this team misconception of this team was that the defensive line was going to make some one-on-one plays. And for the most part, they're not going to. We talked about Alfred Collins, but Tavondre Sweat, Keandre Coburn, a lot of those guys probably have not lived up to what we want. I think Ajomo has been pretty good. But this is definitely, I think you hit the nail on the head. It's about improvement. You're not going to fix this. Spoiler alert. You're not going to fix this.
No.
And Texas fans, we look for quick fixes and have, which is why you shuffle the deck with coaches and then hope they can come in and change a talent base that is meh. And so does it mean they can't do better with what they have? I'm not saying that. I think they can. But that's going to be back to improvement. You're not fixing this team this year.
Well, not that defense.
You're not.
Not the rush defense, I'll say that. You're not going to fix that. You can, as I said, you'll get better, and that's the whole point. I think as long as you see improvement week to week, you see coaches making the effort to make adjustments, whether it be with personnel, schematics, whatever it may be. So I actually, PK's performance, I know people are really hard on the defense because, I mean, they did give up 135 yards rushing in the fourth quarter, something like that. That's bad. It's not good. But if you go back and rewatch it, and you said it too, you do see him making.
He's trying.
He's making adjustments. He is at least trying to solve the problem.
He's throwing stuff at the wall. You can claim that what he's throwing at the wall is just something different, but it's still crap.
You've seen if it sticks.
Josh Thompson's not foreign to that position.
No.
Let me get your take, DBU man, on Josh Thompson playing that, because I'm so glad you brought that up. It's easy to look at Texas, and when they've gone to the single high and then cover three, they've gotten beat, specifically the Texas Tech game. They've had problems with the passing game, but to me, it more sticks out with their run fits and actually taking proper angles and filling proper lanes, and that to me is something Josh Thompson maybe at safety could do.
They believe so. I think they're trying to look for solutions. So, and you're right. He's a guy. He's played nickel. He's played cornerback. He's played safety. He's a physical cornerback too. I mean, when he comes down and has to actually be a cover two corner, right, playing that cloud coverage. If he has to come down and be the run enforcer, we've actually seen him make plays. I mean, he's physical there. So maybe they believe that will translate, to safety. I don't know if it will necessarily, but at least you have Darian Dunn at corner. You have some other options at corner that may be adequate that can play that. And maybe at safety now, you know, maybe you don't have, you already exhausted all your options, right? You put Adamora out there versus Oklahoma State. You played Schooler, played B.J. Foster.
Schooler's
Jaren
not
Thompson.
The answer.
I'm saying, and maybe at this point, more than halfway through the season, he's saying, okay, we need some other solutions here, because the ones that we have now at safety, they still have not proven that they can, with some any discipline, you know, fill the run gaps and make the proper run fits consistently. And that's what you need in the fourth quarter. Because he was playing, like, he was playing 3-4, as we told you. He was playing four linebackers on the field. Safeties, it was paramount. They come down and fill the alley. They didn't. They did most of the game, but not in the fourth quarter.
No, not when it mattered. That can also get back to how worn out are these guys. That gets on the offense a little bit the last couple games and what they've done in the second half. And it's just three and out, three and out, three and out, three and out. And the defense is on the field. It's not a very talented defense. It's not a good defense at all. They're just trying to be average right now. So that could certainly be, you know, that could certainly be something that that we look at.
I think it's something that PK, at least coming out next week versus Baylor, you're going to see a couple of new faces, whether it be a corner or at least some faces rearranged. You know, one of the ideas that my man Jeff Howe brought up on Longhorn Blitz was Anthony Cook. Right, I wasn't upset, but I was a little bit perturbed, I guess, that Anthony Cook was off the field when they were running their 3-4.
I would bump him to another cornerback spot.
Put him at corner spot. Put him at safety.
He's been your best corner.
He's your best defensive
back. Your best DB, yeah.
So he can play. He works out with the safeties anyway, because they nickels and the safeties work together. Put him at safety, since you're looking for a solution at safety.
There you go.
Put him back at safety, or put him at corner. I'm with you. And Deshaun Jameson actually had a good game. Oklahoma State game too. He almost got two picks. Remember that one?
Yeah.
He almost closes on that quick out route. So
he's had an inconsistent year. That was one of his more consistent games.
Better games. So I don't know why they take Anthony Cook off the field. That was a mistake. Don't take Anthony Cook off the field. Put him somewhere else out there. That's what I'd do.
All right. Apparently Bucky's on hold. Do you want to get to this?
Yeah, let's get Bucky.
Bucky was in here earlier. He finished off the shirts and skins.
I saw Bucky and them walking, but I was running into the studio, and I was like, I'm going to be late if I go have a conversation. So,
all right. Bucky didn't get enough time in the morning. Buck, what's up, man?
What's up, Buck?
I want to ask you this question, Rod. The guys filling the lanes, and when they're coming up for support, what is it about the head ducking in things with these guys? A lot of them are there, but when in the fourth quarter that head goes down, nothing can happen good when your head goes down, right? Anytime I've ever been involved with, whether it's being a wide receiver, having a block or something, when your head goes down, you're just asking for trouble. First of all, big guys, that's not where you want to have the contact, is with that head.
Yep.
And is it when you get tired, that head just automatically goes down when you get ready to have contact? Is that a discipline thing that you just have to keep that up, that you need to have your face in it and not your, you know, not the top of your head? It just seems that, you know, Oklahoma, you know, when guys fill the lane on a big play, you just lose sight of people when your head goes down. Is that part of being tired? Is that the easy way out?
Buck, I think it's fatigue, man. When my technique would look terrible on film, usually it was after big plays or something. I mean, that's when your technique and your fundamental suffer, is when the fatigue gets to you, and then you're not, you know, obviously you're not processing the information as quickly as you should, and you're not thinking through your alignment, your assignment, and your technique. So I agree. And of course, I mean, they were gassed. I get it. The three and outs on the offensive side of the ball. But I'm with you. I think it's fatigue. There's no doubt, because earlier in the game, you could see them actually having proper run fits. You did not see that in the fourth quarter.
All right, man. Thank you.
Hey, Buck, man. I'm glad you're feeling better, brother. Glad you're back, too.
Feeling so much better. And thanks to Mark Honig, I'm still around.
Hey,
no joke. We don't say thanks to Mark Honig very often, but
when I
heard that story, Buck, I've never felt more appreciative to Mark. Hey, man, you take care of yourself. We appreciate you.
Right,
we appreciate everything you do.
Love you, Buck.
See you guys.
I had a good high school coach that it was first day of practice, and he looked at everyone and he said, "If you can make this tackle," and he had his head down for the state championship, "don't do it." It's like, we lose state. And I thought, do you really mean that? But yeah, and funny enough, those guys senior year would go on to win state, but that's obviously poor technique. And Bucky asked a good question, kind of gets back to what I said. How much of this is them being worn down? Because you go back and rewatch it, their fits are a lot better. They're not great, but they're a lot better and more consistent than they are in the fourth quarter when it's three and out, three and out, three and out, and they're on the field the whole time.
They're just gassed. They're fatigued. And once you're fatigued, I mean, fatigue makes cowards of us all. It also makes idiots of us all.
Definitely idiots.
It's hard for you to think straight when you're really, really, really tired. And, you know, people who've played sports at a higher level understand, even at the high school level, you understand, like, man, it's really hard to think through. You wonder why sometimes you have brain farts out there. It's like, man, how do you miss that coverage?
Right.
Well, he was tired.
That's why I love baseball.
He was worn, exactly.
Unless you're catching.
You get a lot of time to think. That's why it's a thinking man's game.
Catch your breath.
Catch your breath, think it through. That's baseball, but you don't get that chance in football. So I definitely think that's a big part of it. That's why, you know, teams want to go up-tempo. Why do they want to go up-tempo? Because defenders have less time to process more information. That's exactly how you get defenders to be stupid, in a sense. They just—they're not stupid, but they become stupid.
You get hands
in that
on
sense.
Hips, they get stupid.
Yeah, they just—they're not thinking through. They're not thinking through the technique and thinking through their alignment and their assignment. So I think it is a fatigue thing that goes back to strength and conditioning, and that's a kind of a multifactorial issue because it's not all on strength and conditioning. But we are at the midpoint in the season. And that's why you get into you talk about the type of football you want to play. You want to play complementary football because, yeah, if you get a couple of first downs, you ain't got to score, all right? But if you get a couple of first downs on offense, there's a good chance your defense doesn't disintegrate totally in the fourth quarter the way it did.
Yeah.
A couple of first downs.
Right.
Right? That's it. Just a couple.
Or just flip the field,
You know what I mean?
So you go three and out, and they've got a short field, and you've been on the field the whole time. What's usually going to happen?
I mean, you put the defense out there on their own. As you pointed out, just special teams really couldn't help out either because the offense kept getting backed up. So you really never got to flip the field. And I think defense never got a chance to either make adjustments on the sideline or even catch their breath.
Mm-hmm.
By the time, the worst thing ever as a defender, and I can tell you, you're gassed, you're exhausted, you run back to the sideline, and then they say, punt team! And you go, damn it, I just got the Gatorade, all right.
That's even worse.
Or a sudden change, right? And they just throw the pick, which also happened too. By the way, most of those defensive guys are on the punt teams.
Yeah.
They're on the special team. So you actually get like one or two
plays.
And you're like, all right, I'm back out there. So, it is chaos when those three and outs are happening on the sideline.
So if you're starting 44, if 20 of those guys shouldn't be on the field, if you have the type of program you want, it means they're probably playing a lot of special teams too.
A ton. And
this is not when you were here and Michael Huff, as a true freshman, is all over.
Cedric Griffin,
Corey
Michael
Redding's
Huff.
Running down on kickoff team.
No, I'm with you.
Because he's not starting.
No, I'm with you. Yeah, Derek Johnson, as a freshman, is on your kickoff team.
That
stuff
was
like that.
So much fun.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. You don't have that type of depth anymore. And that's what your goal is, to get there. But, man, I understand why it's no excuse. No excuse. Defense, you got to show up. You got to make a stop.
It's not an excuse, but it's a reality.
Exactly. It's something you have to factor in into the evaluation.
I mean, we're not here to make excuses for people, but we are here to at least say what we see.
Got
to
get a stop. But you know what the defense had? They're playing this, right? They're handing this, right? You get the hands to the face by Moore Ojomo. Crucial penalty down there. You get the my personal foul during that time, right? Yep. It was Ray Thorne. I know Malcolm Rodriguez had one just like that on Casey. I get it, if not worse.
Ray Thorne one was going out of bounds, and he'd flushed him on third and long.
No, that was Coburn.
That was Coburn,
That
right.
was the horse collar, which was the right call.
It was the right call.
Which was a crook. That was third down.
No, it was third down. They'd flushed him out of the pocket, and at that point, we know what Sanders is going to do. He's going to float right. And he's probably going to either throw a pick or throw it out of bounds. He was looking to just get rid of football.
Get rid of football or get out of bounds, and Texas gave him a freebie. As Sark said.
I like the aggressiveness. You got to be smart there. You got to understand situation.
Everybody's kind of playing their role in this meltdown. It's not just a one player thing, a one coach thing, a one phase thing. Everybody's played their role. It's been execution. Remember the false start? To start
two on the center? No,
that's the week before. But it was a false start on, I think it's on Ungalau, first drive after Bijan touchdown to start the six drives of ineptitude.
Yep.
And then remember the bobble snaps by Casey. Like two of those. We don't know if it's a hurt hand or not, but the couple of snaps were off. It was just, it was a lot of mistakes all compounding at the most inopportune time for Texas. In those six drives, you go back and look at it, there's a lot of different people screwing up.
Oh no, it's all over.
You
can get on play calling. Yeah. You can certainly get on the players.
Defense, it's a little gumbo of ineptitude there. Everybody's got a little role to play.
They do. offensively, I'm curious what Kyle Flood's thinking about with this offensive line. You've got Tope Amade, who was at right guard. Hayden Connor came in. You go rewatch and they tried to mix people in there, whoever they have, and I think they were at seven that they felt comfortable with, and then you end up losing Okafor, so you're probably down to six. Connor would be that other guy. Obviously, Carrick is in there. So this would be a great week to open up jobs or at least claim that you are. Just try and get as much improvement as possible. There are no fixes.
Yeah, you got to try on the offensive line to get the most really just try to get the most competent combination. And I don't really know what that is right now. I don't think they know what that is right now. So you got to get the best. And I think they're looking at the left tackle, whether it be Carrick or Christian Jones, and maybe this bye week they're going to use both of those guys in first team reps to see maybe they can get an improvement there if Carrick can end up being that guy. But I think at this point, you're right, they don't have any good ideas on the O-line. It's the Argo principle. You got to go with the best bad idea. And that's probably just, like I said, just a combination of what can get you to average play at the O-line. If you can get there, if you can get to average play, you can get to where the O-line is not a liability week in and week out, you'll be light years ahead of where you were to start the season.
In August, I was asking for average play.
That's what you need. If you can just get the O-line.
That is our ceiling.
Where they're not hurting you, where they can't be exploited.
Yeah.
Because right now, the biggest way to exploit Texas, if I'm a defensive coordinator, I'm coming after that O-line.
Oh.
I'm coming at them.
No doubt.
I'm going to make their life hell. I'm making their life hell.
The Argo principle is in effect for the offensive line, the linebackers, and the secondary. It's kind of a lot of units there.
I think you're right.
Am I wrong?
You're definitely right about the secondary. Linebacker.
Dude, the linebackers have been garbage.
At least you got a player there. You got Demo. You got DeMarvion Overshown to build around.
Build around.
You got a block foundation. But, I mean, I'm not saying they haven't been exploited. I know they have been exploited, especially in the passing game. And Lord knows, at times, they have struggled with their run fits, too. But I think the question is,
do you go to four of those instead of two?
I think situationally, I think he did it because he knew that Oklahoma State wanted to run the ball. They have no shame about running the ball on early downs. Even on third downs.
Yeah.
Sometimes Oklahoma State like, no, third and seven, we're going to run it. And you'd be like, what the? They have no shame about controlling the game because they know who they are.
Yeah, they do.
They're like,
no,
we don't score a lot of points, and
they
we're cool
with
that.
They know they're a top 10
team. Our defense is going to win the game.
He's a touchdown dog on the road.
And exactly.
It's an unranked team.
They know who they are.
This week.
Mike Gundy knows how to win those games. He slows it down to a crawl. And that's exactly what he did against Texas. So I think PK expected that. That's why he had the 3-4 in there. I got no complaints about that other than don't take Anthony Cook off the field.
Agreed.
That's your best defensive back. At least it has been so far this year.
You don't have to keep him there. Put him somewhere.
Put him somewhere. Speaking of the best, my friends at Twin Peaks, they might be the best place for you to watch all of your sports action. Doesn't matter if it's football, maybe college football Saturdays, the NFL. You got Monday Night Football, Thursday Night Football tonight. You also got your college football Saturdays, no matter, Major League Baseball playoffs too, and the NBA. This is a great time of year to catch your sports, and Twin Peaks is a great place to do it. So much more than just a sports bar. Every time you go to Twin Peaks, you're greeted by one of the Twin Peaks ladies, and they ensure your experience exceeds expectations. I love their 29-degree draft beer. It is one of their signature items, served up in a perfectly frosted 22-ounce mug. My mouth is watering, kind of talking about it right now. Usually, I'd go to Twin Peaks, get me one of those perfectly frosted Bud Lights. It's a beautiful thing. And also, their kitchen is a beautiful thing. It is a scratch kitchen. Every delicious dish on the menu made from scratch. And if you need a new favorite lunch spot or a new favorite happy hour spot, how about lunch at the Peaks, happy hour at the Peaks? They got light yet hearty filling combos at great prices. Wall-to-wall TV, so you won't miss any of the action. You can catch all the big games from every angle at Twin Peaks. Go check it out right now. There's one near you, the Stassi location or the Round Rock location or the San Marcos location. Never settle, and at Twin Peaks, you don't have to. Twin Peaks eats, drinks, and scenic views.
29-degree beer. So is it frozen?
Well, it's just served up in the mug.
Gotcha.
29 degrees.
I gotcha. Okay.
Perfectly frosted mug.
Nothing like a cold one.
I hope Chris Beard
enjoys his while he can.
When does this start? When does his sacrifice start?
I think start of the season. So I don't know if they're doing that right now or first game.
I like that idea.
I do too.
For those, so are we? Off the record.
Off the record.
All right.
We'll get to that off the record. We're gonna get to it.
It's a nice little tease.
Yeah, like a little tease job
tease.
For you. I know Rod's excited about the next segment.
Ghost Trolls.
They look done. And it was only 2-1, but it felt 3-1, eighth inning, and you're down 4-0. And the Astros just continue to be the Astros. Now they're heading back to Houston and feeling good. What a W, and your Don was special last night.
Ghost Trolls. Welcome back to RBKD. It is a Soul Train Thursday edition of RBKD. You can always watch the show. You can go to hornfm.com and you can tap into the Twitch stream. You also can follow us via Twitter. I'm at Rod Babers in the Twitterverse. Kevin Dunn at KevinDunn01 and my man John Reichel at JS Reichel in the Twitterverse. They used to be called the Lastros. Once the Disastros, now you can kiss their Astros. They're up 9-1.
Well done,
they,
sir.
Yeah, they beat the Red Sox 9-1.
I remember Disastros.
I remember that. Oh, yeah. Fun. I mean, the Lastros.
Lastros, Disastros.
I remember when we weren't saying they you know, kiss my Astros. We were saying they look like Astros.
Yeah.
and not the good Astros.
No.
But, yeah, they get a big win in Game 5 of the ALCS, 9-1. Put an Old Testament-style butt-whipping on the Red Sox. I did not see that coming. Because they've been essentially what happened, because the Astros had been lucky, in my opinion, to have the series tied up 2-2. I said this yesterday, considering the way their starters had performed.
Oh, God.
Right? Their starters combined, I think, for a 6 2/3 innings through 4 games. They had the record, the postseason record, for the fewest outs. Recorded by those starters through 4 games.
Right.
And I said,
I didn't know if we were coming back to Houston. It felt like that, because that's the other thing. You're up 2-1, and there were 2 ass kicking. So it actually felt worse than it was.
It did. It felt worse because you had no starting pitching.
And you had no starting pitching.
It was all bullpen and relief pitching, and you finally got some elite starting pitching from Framber Valdez.
He was lights out, man.
He was lights out. He got you 8 innings. He actually pitched more. He got you more innings from a starter in Game 5 than your 4 starters combined in the first 4 games.
Think
and
about that.
It was huge.
Yeah, I mean, that's nuts.
Mind-blowing. It's crazy. And it worked out, man. He was great. He was unbelievable. And he pitched 8 innings, allowed just 3 hits, 1 walk, 5 strikeouts, Frambozo, as they call it, the team calls him. He showed up in the clutch.
And how about, yeah, he was fantastic. I mean, it could not have been better timing for him to come in and give you that start.
Yeah.
And I hope the Dodgers brass was watching that, hey, you can actually stick with the guy if they're really rolling like that. Now, the Dodgers hadn't necessarily had that, but that was exactly what the Astros needed. You worry about starting pitching. And then how about Yordan Alvarez? You know, lefty on lefty. Chris Sale, that was the best Chris Sale's looked, his stuff, since he came back. Like that, it wasn't necessarily Chris Sale a couple years ago, but that lefty on lefty, when he's whipping that thing. And by the way, the homer he hit, that was 3 inches off the plate. Like, how do you cover that?
That's crazy. Yeah, that's freaky.
Maybe 2 inches. It's 2 or 3 inches off the plate, and he's able to cover that. All 3 hits for him against Sale the other way, lefty on lefty, letting it travel, and playing pepper with the Green Monster. But that was huge, and you get that huge 5 spot, I think it was. Yeah, 5 spot in the 6th inning.
Yeah.
Because you still got a tight game. You got 1-0, you're happy with Framber, but that just blew it open.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I love that it was kind of their answer, right? Because the 5th inning, you start, that was when.
6th inning, I'm sorry about
that. Yeah, it was. No, yeah. You said it right.
Okay.
But I was talking about the 5th inning where, because remember, he didn't allow, Framber Valdez I'm talking about, right? He didn't allow a base runner or even a ball hit out of the infield until the 5th inning.
There's right.
A 5th inning single there. And then, remember, he hits the next batter.
Guys on first and second with no outs.
And that's when Dusty.
6-4-3,
that's
right?
When Dusty came to the plate. Framber Valdez said after the game, he's like, I thought I was done. I looked behind me. I was like, he was sure that somebody's warming up or somebody's coming out there. And Dusty just came up and said, you good?
Yeah.
Make sure you relax. He's like, you're good. Don't just relax. Take some deep breaths.
I love it.
Keep you got your stuff. Your stuff is on. Don't
that's
let
the
that
one and done I did
take
last
you out
week,
of your mindset.
Though,
yeah.
Is that the new age thinking is you definitely pull them there.
No, yeah,
have
and
some
that's what
feel.
He thought.
Have
he
some
thought.
Feel.
He thought he was
and
gone.
If his stuff is still there, the sink was still there, roll with him.
Yeah, and that's exactly what he did. And I think some other managers probably would have took him out. He stayed with him. That confidence paid off. It paid huge dividends. But I think the Astros almost felt threatened by that 5th inning from Boston, and then that's the 6th inning.
Yeah.
Then they blow it wide open, and I love that that was their answer, and I love the way Framber Valdez responded, too. He had, how about this, he led the majors during the season in ground ball rate.
That sink I'm talking about.
Right? And then, so what was
he's got heavy sink.
Okay. And what was his two big pitches? Was the curveball and the sinker?
And the sinker.
Yeah. And he had basically 13 ground outs, two flyouts of the 20 batted balls against him. There were 13 that basically had a below average launch angle, if you will.
Right.
Yeah, so he,
and the biggest one was that 6-4-3 double play in the fifth inning.
He was dealing, man.
Guys in first and second, no outs. It's 1-0, as you brought up.
He's
and you're thinking,
zone.
Okay, here it goes. And 6-4-3, him and Egger.
No, it was magical for Astros fans. So you hadn't seen stuff. I mean, when Lance McCullers went down, I mean, you got – from Lance McCullers, you were getting that elite starting pitching, at least in the ALDS. I mean, I think his
0.84.
ERA, yeah, it was something freaky like that. Oh, by the way, the update is he's not going to be available for the World Series. There were some thoughts that
he
might. Yeah, he's done.
Forearm tightness, that worries me, man. That's almost done. Always ends up being serious.
Yeah, too serious to try to rush somebody back. That's
he usually ends up in surgery, which he's already had. But think about Greinke the day before. You end up winning that game, but what did Greinke go?
Melted down. Yeah.
Inning and something? Two innings?
I think you got one and one-third inning out of him or something like that.
Trying to watch.
Yeah. No, you didn't get much out of him either. That was the relievers, man. That was Christian Javier had, I think, three innings in that? I'm just saying that they put a lot of different. It was like five.
Johnny Bullpen.
You had five different pitchers that accounted for the six scoreless innings in that game. So they were just making it work with gum and bubble tape. Yep.
WD-40.
But they actually got a real elite pitching performance from one of their starters in Framber Valdez. So they're gonna need another one. Matter of fact, they'll probably need it from Christian Javier.
They are. This lineup, though, 1-7. And look, the Red Sox lineup had been red hot and they've cooled off here a little bit the last couple games. But when you get to Gurriel at 7, like you're talking about no breath for the Texas defense. There's no breath if you're on the mound here. I mean, you go through this thing, and this lineup is just loaded. You got Kyle Tucker in front of him. Correa, who's about to make $400 million, is probably the top shortstop on the market. And he's not even in your top. What is he hitting? He's hitting fifth. And Yordan was so impressive. To have a young lefty who's a power hitter like that understand how to face one with the whip and the arm angle that a lefty like Chris Sale has, it's really impressive. And it's obvious what his approach was. His approach was, I'm going to left field, I'm going to let this ball travel, and I'm just going to, you know, like I said, play pepper with it. And he ends up going 3-for-5. Gurriel goes 3-for-5, and Gurriel kind of had that last little punch in that fifth run, sixth inning. It just, this is an impressive team. They've got a feel right now that they're going to win the whole thing. The only question is pitching.
Starting pitching, you got it.
Going to be a question.
If you get that type of performance or anything close to it,
you're five wins away, man. Five wins away.
No, and then Christian Javier, you're going to need him to show up big too. He's going to. And by the way, he was great in Game 4 for you. You got three scoreless innings out of Christian Javier. But, I'm concerned about the starting pitching as
you
an Astros fan. I mean, that's
You will be until they're celebrating.
You're going to need one of those guys, whether it be Greinke. Christian Javier, Valdez is showing you something a little bit right now. Yukiti, you're gonna need one of them guys to just have the pitching performance of their life. Pretty much, one of them is gonna have to do that during the World Series.
And Valdez gave that to you.
He gave it to you.
He knew how big that was. He knew he had to eat up innings, and you could have eaten up innings, and that line could be 8 innings, 4 runs. I'm not sure he would have stayed in that long, and you win that thing 9-4, and we would be praising him and just saying, "Hey, man, you did everything you could." But the fact that he dealt and shoved like that, that was stepping up to the plate.
Man, I thought you just got five good innings. I said yesterday, if you get five,
absolutely.
You're only getting one or two innings out of your, not even two innings out of your starting pitching in the previous four games. You got five out of them, that'd be enough to infuse, because they need to infuse some confidence in the team.
Yeah.
That it was starting to wear on them, I think, psychologically, that none of their starters could even make it out of the second inning. And I think now, Framber Valdez, now you get that confidence. And I'll say this about Framber Valdez. There's a great story about him. I believe it was in cron.com, Houston Chronicle, where they talk about how he went last year to a sports psychologist. And during that sixth inning where the Astros are putting up the five spot, he was meditating. because he said that he needed to meditate. He had to flush himself of like all of the bad mojo, and he wanted to focus on the task at hand, every batter that he had and all this. So it, for him, it's working, but I give him props because he's getting deep. And that's he's trying to crystallize his focus, he says, basically. And that's why he went to see the sports psychologist. He had too much going through his mind when he was pitching.
You
he
can't
wanted
do
to,
that.
He wanted to just be able to, you know, put something out of his mind really quickly and then be able to focus on whatever the task was at hand, and he wasn't doing that consistently. And who knows? Andy Nunez is the psychologist he gives props to, but he said it was in the Dominican Republic, and he found a really good psychologist that helped him out.
Sports psychology in Dominican, huh?
Right. You know what? Sark needs it right now.
Yeah.
Sark is talking about psychology with his team, talking about they're fragile.
A lot of the team could use it.
Yeah, but that matters. If you if you see that weakness in your DNA as an athlete, go fix it.
And the other
go figure it out.
The other comparison with Valdez and the Texas football team is he was having problems finishing. He would look really good last year
That's
and
exactly
earlier this year,
right.
And he'd get into the fifth or sixth inning, and he couldn't get over that hump.
That's exactly
so
right.
So that's even bigger, the fact that he's able, in especially that all-important fifth inning, that has been a bugaboo for him. I mean, that's been a problem, and you know that's in his head.
Yeah, and then, it's when Dusty came out and everything.
And Dusty came out, and he flushes it, and the fact that he's able to go eight, a guy who had really struggled in the fifth and sixth inning, because he had that sinker, he had really good stuff. And I remember telling you earlier this year, like, this guy's really good, but he gets to that point. And the fact that he was able to, in the biggest game of his career, get over that, and now you're going back to Houston and that barn up 3-2, advantage Astros.
Agreed. I think they got a huge advantage. And
outside of the obvious 3-2.
Yeah.
Bigger advantage.
Bigger
than that.
Advantage. And I think you want to close it out in six.
Yes, you do.
You don't want this thing in
six. If you're Atlanta tonight, you want to close this out in five.
And I want to say that was the first time that an Alex Cora Red Sox coach team had lost back-to-back playoff games.
In the playoffs. No, it's the first time ever.
So,
like, say what you want about Cora.
They bounce back. Usually.
Cora's got a good feel for his team, and you're right.
You trying to beat him three in a row? It's going to be tough.
He had never, as a manager, lost two in a row in the playoffs.
So now you're trying to do three in a row.
It's gonna be rough.
They're not going down without a fight. Just so you know.
They gotta be ready for it. Seven. I can't wait.
I hope not. I don't want it to go seven.
Of course, I know. But as a baseball fan, I hope the Astros win.
We're just gonna start in pitching alone.
Yeah.
For view of the Astros, that's what I'm freaking out about.
And then how does that set up for the World Series
brutal.
And everything? Especially if Atlanta finishes tonight.
Yeah, and you gotta exhaust all your arms like that.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Baseball's a weird sport. Atlanta, Dodgers tonight. That'll be 7 o'clock.
I guess I'm rooting for the Dodgers then.
You are?
Got to be rooting
You're rooting
the Dodgers.
For the Dodgers the next two.
You got to be rooting for
and
the Dodgers.
And then maybe hope Atlanta wins in 16 in game
seven. Yeah.
Right.
You're an Astros
That's
fan.
What you're looking for.
Yeah.
But Atlanta's been the third best team since the trade deadline. You got to give them a lot of credit for the trades they made. Eddie Rosario with two home runs. Was going for the cycle and said, nah, I'm going to go actually hit my second home run. The guys they brought in, Duvall, Soler, Jock Peterson, like they were left for dead because they weren't very good. They're in the East and they were in third place and they lose Ronald Acuna. And any of us watching and a lot of Braves fans thought, okay, this is it.
Yeah.
They were also up 3-1 against the Dodgers last year. So let's remember that these Dodgers aren't out, but Justin Turner is out. Grade 2
he's done.
Hamstring, he's done.
It's a huge loss.
Max Muncy, the broken wrist or forearm, he's out. You don't have Trevor Bauer. You don't have Dustin May. Yeah, that's been the case for a long time. You just get the sense of Dodgers.
Dodgers
it's a different team, man. Yeah. When they're all healthy, it's one of the most talented major league teams I've ever seen in my life. But they're not all healthy, and the Braves have a feel right now. And they've been rolling since the deadline.
Yeah, they're hot.
They're hot. Yeah. So, root for the Dodgers tonight if you're an Astros fan. Root for the Dodgers in Game 6. Root for a 17-inning, just we got to use everything. Every single bullet. We're emotionally spent. And I would still say you probably want the Braves because there's something about this Dodgers team. Congratulations to all you Astros fans, though. You guys are now 27 outs away from going to the World Series. You're 5 wins away from picking up ring number 2. You don't count, but I can. All right, let's get to the Big 12 this weekend. Some Big 12 games that stand out, including the one we kind of referenced earlier. You've got a top 10 team that's a touchdown dog on the road. We'll get into Iowa State, Oklahoma State. Also, who would be in our Big 12 title game today if Rod and I had to kind of predict? We'll get into that up next. I like this jam here, John. John Reichel behind the glass. What do we got here?
Oh, yeah. Everyone's a winner. Hot Chocolate.
Hot Chocolate?
Yeah, that's the name of the band.
Wow. It's would have been Sexual Chocolate, but I guess you
I should
take
use this for the podcast.
What, Hot Chocolate?
No, Everyone's a Winner.
Oh, you could. Not bad.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, for everyone gets a trophy.
That's not bad. Not bad.
I don't think I've ever heard this. I like this. Hot Chocolate? Do they have anything else?
No, this is their hit.
No.
Nah.
This is it.
There's a reason
they actually only recorded one song.
Yeah.
You're right. I've never heard of them.
There's a reason we've never heard of them before.
Good band name, though, too.
It's a good name.
True. It's so good that someone even requested this song like earlier this week.
Oh, really?
Because the song was, like, I think in the 70s. So they're like, oh, play it for the Bat Tuesday. I'm like, nah, I'm saving this for Soul Train Thursday.
I like it.
Good request, though.
Yeah, it's a good song.
I like that. Any requests you want, Specs text line, 512-447. Actually, 512-337-3776. I just opened that up, John. Now you're going to get, like, 100 texts about, hey, you should play this on this day. But I think John,
request line?
Yeah, John has that on lockdown. You used to do that as a kid? I mean, I used to.
I never called it, but yeah.
Call the music station.
I don't think I ever got through. I probably called a couple times. I never got through.
I mean, outside of Suzanne Halliburton, there was no one I was calling more.
Oh, yeah.
Just hitting it up.
What were you requesting? Like, what songs were you requesting?
I remember, I think the one I requested the most was You Can't Touch This. I could not get enough of that song was out. I could not, Jacob's laughing right there. I could not get enough of that song.
You can't touch this. Yeah, you're right.
So good.
That was a good song back in the day. You're right. Oh, we got you
MC
going.
Hammer, former A's bat boy.
Mm-hmm. You're right. Good friend, one of the BFFs of Deion Sanders.
There you go.
He was in Deion's video, Must Be the Money. Must Be the Money. You remember that one?
Yeah, I do. Mm-hmm. I do. I do remember it.
Yeah.
As I love Deion at cornerback, I didn't need his rap game.
MC Hammer's rap game wasn't great either.
No,
but he was
fair.
He was a performer, though. He did a great job. And it's like, it was just hype music.
Dancer.
Remember the fashion, the Hammer pants? Like, he was just kind of a performer of his time. But yeah. I remember.
Those were loose.
And he was not a one. And one. Like, Hammer had like 4 or 5 hits.
Too Legit to Quit.
Too Legit to Quit.
Which he did a lot with the Falcons.
We Got to Pray. This is what we pray. Yeah, that one. Yeah. Have you seen her? Have you seen her?
Yeah.
Yeah, one of those. No, he did.
He
did. Hammer had his time. It was amazing.
He did.
When he took over, he just kind of took over. He was everywhere. You couldn't go anywhere without seeing Hammer or the pants.
Or the Entourage.
Which was his downfall.
He was downfall. He got broke.
Because he paid everybody.
Yeah, he did. No, he sounded like a good guy. It's just you can't make those decisions.
Can't pay everybody, Hammer.
All right, Texas not playing this weekend. We know that. We do have 4 Big 12 games to look at. And if you look at the standings right now, I mean, obviously Oklahoma would be your favorite. And they are 4-0 in conference play. You got Oklahoma State at 3-0, Baylor at 3-1, followed by Iowa State at 2-1. You got Texas and Texas Tech at 2-2, TCU and Kansas State, maybe that purple wild card we had talked about, they're not sitting good. Kansas State is 0-3, TCU is 1-2. So we'll give our thoughts on maybe if we had to predict today who would be in the Big 12 championship game. But obviously the game of the week in the Big 12 is going to be 2:30, Fox in Ames. Oklahoma State comes into town, ranked 8th in the country. And they're 6-0, 3-0 in Big 12 play, as I just mentioned. They're a touchdown dog at Iowa State. Vegas is looking at this. They're not buying Oklahoma State. They're going to take Iowa State. I'm going to take Iowa State to win this game, but I don't know if I would drop 7 with that team.
Yeah, I'm going to take Oklahoma State to win the game.
Okay, look at you. You should jump on the money line.
Yeah, I'll take Oklahoma State. I just don't trust Purdy. And
fair enough.
Every time I've trusted Purdy, it's come back to bite me. So I'm
it
not
has,
trust
hasn't
Purdy.
It?
Yeah, every time. I love Matt Campbell. I love that. I would say might have the best defense in the Big 12. Love John Heacock.
They have one of the best defenses in the country.
It is. It's legit.
Statistically, they
it
have.
Is. Yeah, you look at all the advanced metric, FEI, SP Plus. It's really, really good. And I just don't trust Purdy. I just think against a really good defense, Purdy will throw you a couple, and that's all it takes for Oklahoma State the way they play football.
Oh, they play solid football. They don't beat themselves, and they take advantage of opportunities.
But Spencer Sanders could throw them a couple. And then
Spencer
then,
does do
then
if
that's
he throws.
Game changer. See, that's on the road. That's what worries me is that both of those – how could I trust either one of them damn quarterbacks? So, yeah, I'm going to go with Oklahoma State. I'm going to go with the hot hand. Right now, Gundy is hot. He's done something he's never done. He's won 3 consecutive games versus ranked teams. So I'm going to go with Oklahoma State. Just they feeling it. It might be their year.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Iowa State. We got West Virginia at TCU. That'll be ESPNU 6:30 game. Mentioned West Virginia 0-3, TCU 1-2 in Big 12 play. TCU a 4.5-point favorite. This is in Fort Worth. West Virginia, I thought they'd be – they've been competitive because they almost beat Oklahoma, so I don't want to say they haven't been competitive, but they're sitting there at 0-3. You feel like they're gonna win one and pop one through here. This may be the weekend to do it.
They're going to upset somebody. I mean, they're going to play spoiler to somebody because I'm with you. They're not a terrible team.
They're not.
TCU has been their own worst enemy. You know, they really have been. If TCU stops, I mean, against Texas, the three turnovers against Texas, they had similar issues versus, you know, SMU. They were kind of a disaster there against SMU, too. And against Oklahoma, they just got beat. I mean, there's no way around that. They got beat versus Oklahoma. I still got faith that Oakland, TCU, that, you know, they're a good enough team where against a team like West Virginia, I think they'll pull it out. Zach Evans is still, I mean, I think he's leading the Big 12 in yards per rush.
He is.
More like seven. It's like 7.6 or something like
that.
He's just
going to get that rush.
He's just going to get more rushes. Yeah, I'll go with TCU. I feel good about that. They're underachieving this year, but I still feel good about them beating West Virginia.
Other purple, K-State on the road in Lubbock. This is a pick'em game. It's even over under at 60.5. Kansas State 0-3, Tech 2-2. That's in Big 12 play. I don't know what to think about this Tech team. I wouldn't touch them with my own money.
I agree. Every time I'm down on them, they end up winning. And every time I'm high on
them, believe.
They disappoint me. So
like the team in Austin.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'll go with K-State. I think they're more consistent. But I can see Texas Tech pulling that one out. Because they can score. I think they can score probably better than K-State. K-State's defense is definitely better than Texas Tech's defense.
Yep.
Then it may come down to field position, and I think K-State has better special teams than Texas Tech.
I agree with that. I think you could argue that the winner in the game in Ames is going to be that other team with Oklahoma in the Big 12 championship.
I agree with that 100%.
So I'm with you on that. I'm actually sticking with my preseason deal, and I'm not one of those people that's like, I said this 4 months ago, so I have to stick with it. I think it'll be Oklahoma and Iowa State.
Yeah, I would say his defense
is. So you're still Oklahoma and Oklahoma State if you think Oklahoma State's going to win.
Yeah. No, I could see that. I could see Iowa State, there's a reason they're favorite in this game because they're still the same team that everybody had projected as a top 10 team to start the season because they had so much experience returning, because they had one of the best tight ends in the country, they had one of the best running backs in the country, offensive line was a veteran O-line, and the defense was projected and still is considered to be a top 15, top 10 defense right around there. Yeah, I think for Oklahoma State, though, you know, I like the way that defense plays together, and I think that they play really good situational football. Iowa State, man, I know later in the year they are a much better team at the beginning of the year. I still can't forget the Iowa State team I watched earlier in the year. Thinking to myself going, what the hell is going on? So that's probably why I have a little bit of bias. Because what I saw, recency bias, is I've watched Oklahoma State beat Texas.
Yeah.
And I haven't watched Iowa State perform at a really high level. The last time I was truly watching Iowa State was when I last gave up on them, which was earlier in the year. So I'll confess that.
I will say this. I think Iowa State feels a lot more comfortable with the role they've been in since those two losses. Because all the hype went away.
Right.
And it was, all right.
No expectations.
Back to being treated like crap.
Now no more expectations.
Some people are like that in relationships.
You're right. It's a great point.
I don't feel good unless I'm being treated like crap.
I agree with that.
And Iowa State, I think, it was just way, way too much hype and love.
Yeah, they're talking about college football playoff love.
Yeah,
that was
insane.
And ironically, this was the year for an Iowa State to make a move like that.
It was.
Because all the powers
look
are down.
And Oklahoma's a lot worse than we thought. Yeah, I say that, and they're sitting at 7-0.
That's, in a nutshell, that's Oklahoma, right?
Right. God, that'd be nice. How's your year been? Awful.
What are you?
We've been let down on everything. What are you? Third in the country in 7-0.
We're at the bench. I started the quarterback, too. What are you? It's undefeated still.
7-0. We're going to win the league again. They're in Lawrence. 38.5-point favorite in Lawrence.
38.5-point favorite.
38.5-point favorite.
I'll probably cover the number because Kansas is terrible.
Kansas is bad.
They're horrible. Terrible.
That's the only thing I think everyone predicted that we nailed. Kansas is going to be the worst team.
Everybody got that one right.
They're going to be the worst team in the Big 12, including Kansas. I think Leipold actually said, we're going to be the worst team in the conference.
Oh, man.
All right, we got 1 hour in. We got 3 hours to go. Plenty of football talk, including the NFL. We'll get back to that coming up next. Is Deshaun Watson moving, and is he moving soon? We got a right tackle who's back in Dallas and an Austin kid who's going to need some surgery. This is RBKD on the Horn.